second half of the dynamic duo, Holly Deo and Stan Deo. Stan is joining us now. Holly was just with us this last hour to talk about her latest book, Prophetic Perils. Folks, go to standeo.com, and as Holly said, you can download the Dare to Prepare information there.
A lot of the Dare to Prepare stuff is free. I mean, preparation stuff is free there.
Yeah.
At that website.
And you can also get her book, Prophetic Perils, from standeo.com, as well as follow along with Stan this hour on the Hagman & Hagman Report to the right of the microphone under the show images page. Stan joins us each and every Tuesday on the last hour, and we talk about a number of issues from geopolitics to earth changes to space weather. Excuse me. We have Stan Deo standing by, and we're going to bring him on now. Stan, it's great to have you on. Holly did a fantastic job.
Hard act to follow, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
I wouldn't want to try that, Stan. I'm going to tell you right now. It's such a pleasure to have her on and to hear the voice behind the words in Prophetic Peril. It really is, because she put so much time and effort, blood, sweat, and tears into that book. I'm not sure about the blood or the tears, but I can tell you, I know that she sweat a lot, put a lot of sweat into that, a lot of research. Man, what, 14 hours a day for a while? So, God bless her. Man, that's great stuff.
I know. Is your mic fading in and out, Doug?
No, but I am.
Shouldn't be.
What I think I'm doing here is I had adjusted the microphone earlier. I don't know. Is that better, folks? I mean, Stan.
Well, you did like you moved further away or closer to like you were trying to get something, I guess. Maybe that's it. I'm just worried about my own system, wondering whether it's me doing it or you. But
No. It's me. It's operator error. So you're coming in 5x5.
Okay. Excellent. I got a video or link to about a 11-minute video by a guy named Tom Loopshoe on YouTube. If you guys look it up, I haven't got a link to it yet up on the site. I'll try to do that here shortly. But it's entitled FEMA High-Level Briefing, Mega Earthquake Swarms Coming. And this guy, ex-Marine here, is talking about one of his buddies who had a friend's family member in FEMA for briefings recently about their fear of major earth changes and earth movements, earthquakes, due to a number of factors, and one of them being the weight of water over certain fault lines. And he said they didn't explain it, didn't know whether it was like from flooding or rivers, like overflowing, or whether it was from other things. And so I put on their site, I put a comment, and I said, look, there are several things that you need to consider when you're looking at what may cause water increase or weight increases that could trigger these earthquakes. And, they were like, okay, you can have earth tides or water tides from the moon. And if we're increasing the sea level by melting ice, as we are at various places, then as that progresses, the oscillation, back and forth of the moon's passage over the earth or near the earth will cause tidal swells on the coast, and particularly on our west coast that we're looking at. And if you look at the water use in California and all along the west coast where that drought has been for several years, you'll see that they've changed the weight of that structure on the land side by draining the aquifers down to a dangerous level. It might take 1,000 years to replenish what they've taken out of the ground in the time of the drought. So lightweight can cause as much trouble as heavyweight on the seaside. When you look at all these things, what this guy's report is telling us is that FEMA is urgently getting ready to, take care of survivors from major events. Now, it didn't sound like Yellowstone was about to erupt or something like that. It was more like New Madrid and that kind of thing, or the west coast of the United States. But it was an emergency session. As I said there in the title of the thing, it's FEMA High-Level Briefing, Mega Earthquake Swarms Coming. Now, even this week, Kim, Earthquake Girl, she's been sending me stuff all over the weekend. A number of small swarms are occurring, and one of the interesting ones that she sent was a swarm of, like, you know, twos, two threes, 2.3s, that kind of stuff, over in the Long Valley Caldera in California at Mammoth Lakes. So the southern, kind of the south, western rim of the Caldera, a cluster of quakes there. And, you know, we've seen a number of quakes, some significant, down in the North Island of New Zealand around Lake Taupo and north of there at White Island. Some of these big volcanoes are getting a little bit antsy, and the earthquakes that we're seeing, and today, yeah, and in fact, that brings up the point. If you go to the show images page, way kind of middle of the page, you'll see the pictures of our books across one row, and right above it, the right says EQs or earthquakes last 7 days close to Fukushima. And if you click on that, this is, again, part of the things that I'm concerned about, because the earthquakes are not huge, but, you know, like fours and fives and that kind of stuff. But if you look at them, they're all clustered around Fukushima area, along that, where that big Richter 9 earthquake, you know, broke the reactors. So when we see little flurries there, you know, in the space of 7 days, that's kind of interesting, I think. You know, what was it, probably a week to 10 days ago, we had a Richter 7.4, which I mentioned before, I think, on the show about the earthquake occurring down where the El Tanin meteor stopped moving and formed that ridge in the South Atlantic. And that, of course, that Richter 7.4 and all the aftershocks were in that area, which, again, is because the surface of the Earth was stressed in that area when the asteroid hit and formed those ridges. The same kind of ridges are in Indonesia at the Banda Sea, and, oh, well, of course, we had about a Richter 5 there in the last week as well. So you can see my concern. There are things ramping up, and this guy's video, you know, kind of makes you think that behind the scenes everybody's getting ready. What was it, like 2 years ago that I told you I had an informant in the geologist sector at Yellowstone saying that they were putting in seismographs, seismometers all over Yellowstone area and hooking them up to a supercomputer at that time down in Texas, probably University of Texas, but I'm pretty sure they've now switched it over to the NSA data center in Utah, which is closer. But why would they be monitoring with a supercomputer these little seismometers up at Yellowstone unless they were trying to get minute-by-minute type reports of, I don't know, magma buildup or whatever? There's not a lot of issue with water over, you know, the Yellowstone caldera, I don't think. Most of the action we're seeing is to the west of the caldera, or, you know, on the west side of the park, not where the lake is on the east side. But again, why were they keeping it quiet? Why do they have so many people sign non-disclosure agreements for the government there? People are even driving trucks and sweeping the grounds. I mean, they all had to sign these things that they can't tell about all the seismometers and the government's involvement in the computer hookups at Yellowstone. Again, that's, of course, hearsay because I wasn't there, but the sources were pretty well qualified, and I promise not to divulge their identities, but that Yellowstone situation could run people toward the New Madrid area survivors. It's interesting, too, that the guy was shown a map. He could only, this Marine in the video, was only able to take notes mentally and then later write them down, but the areas that FEMA's been preparing to receive survivors include some, you know, in the northern Oklahoma, Kansas, and that area, and also all along the right side and left side of the New Madrid fault line. So if they're preparing there, it's either for New Madrid or for Yellowstone survivors, which would probably go south because they wouldn't go directly east because the prevailing winds and the ash and stuff would kill them there in the north and the Dakotas and stuff like that. So anyway, look at this guy's video, Tom Loopshoe, and as I say later, I will try to get a link to that up on the show images page in between the earthquake images there. Now look, let's see, last 7 days worldwide. That's just over to the left of where we just were. We are are seeing a pattern of pretty healthy quakes over on the southwestern part of the arc of fire in the Pacific, all around Australia and New Zealand. And we're also seeing a cluster of them in California, as you can see on that image, forming kind of a little circle, I guess I would call it, up through the Rockies and up into Montana, Wyoming, and then over to Washington State and around. You can see this little smaller quakes showing it's stressed in that area. So keep an eye on that. That whole area there is showing signs of a pre-quake fracturing, small pressure-relieving earthquakes. They're not major ones, but anyway, that's what that one's doing there. Let's see, earlier this week, I think it was, NASA put out an article about the melting of the Arctic ice. And as I've said several times on your show, the drift of the North Pole has been twice as fast as the drift of the South Pole. You know, it's wobble, indicating an instability there. And also, I was telling you all this year that the Arctic Sea up there has been warming and melting ice. If you click on that picture I've got there, it would be up about two rows from where we just were with the earthquakes. On the right side, you'll see a picture of Earth with some ice-looking stuff on it. And if you look at that, I've got the March 25th of this year and the August 13th of this year images of the ice at the North Pole. And it has really kind of puzzled the scientists because it has melted quite rapidly. It's setting a new norm, they're saying, at NASA for the melt rate of the North Pole. And, of course, I did cover that some time back in the probably a couple years ago, in the heating of the poles is due to, you know, currents, electric currents flowing in the Earth from the equator to the poles, taking the heat and pushing it up. Now, the South Pole is... you know, it's gathering ice in parts of it, but yet there is a huge fracture through the Larsen Sea iceberg or shelf that hangs over the ocean there. Anyway, with the article there connected to that melting of the ice on the North Pole, the Arctic Circle, if you go to the link at the text underneath there, it will show you a video. You can see it in real time, or, you know, like in a video time, of the melting of the ice from March till now, well, almost till now, till the first part of August. And, you know, it is amazing to see, and it that article tells you more about it that I said that you can click to with the text down at the bottom. If the ice does continue to melt, and let's assume something happens, they say it won't, but let's say that all the ice at the North and South Pole did melt and get into the sea, slide in whether it's completely melted or not, but get its weight into the sea. This would increase the sea level across the planet. If you click on the image right underneath that ice picture on the Earth, that blue one, it's showing North America and what our coastlines would look like if we melted a lot of ice, okay? And the you'll see the outline of what used to be Florida there, what used to be the coast of Louisiana, Mississippi, in that area, and all up the coast toward Canada. And on the west coast, you can see it's not quite as bad. It's more the east coast that would suffer. But this is a map you can go to. National Geographic makes it available. If you click on the text underneath there, it'll take you to their website, and you can choose what country you want to look at. In the middle of it, there'll be a, you know, the picture of the United States. There'll be a sign that says "Click here for an interactive map." And I'm not sure, you may have to be a member of National Geographic to get that. But anyway, it is there available, so you can see where you. If you're living on the eastern states and southern coast of the United States, where you probably should move away from. If all the ice did melt, it would raise our sea levels about 230 feet. And it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out that that would submerge a lot of towns and, you know, housing and stuff on our coastlines. They do say that this is probably not a clever way or a clever place to live on our coastlines. guy, that Marine, I think he did mention that in his video, too. So what Ollie said, you know, things are kind of ramping up. We're seeing Earth changes.
That's what she said, as we like to say. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Stan, I got a question about the rising water due to the melting ice caps. We know that each year there is a cooling and then a heating of the ice caps. They melt and then they refreeze. You're talking about if the temperatures continue to rise, kind of what, you know, the global warming forecasters or Al Gore have been saying for a long time. If it gets to a desperate enough level, the sea will rise by, you know, 6 inches to a foot or two, then that would mean, you know, complete disaster for those on the coastline, correct?
Pretty much so. I mean, it doesn't take 230 feet of ocean rise to cause a great deal of problems. What happens to all the people whose houses are submerged or flooded all along the coast? Their property is now worthless. Their houses are destroyed, and a lot of them won't have insurance, and they can't count on FEMA to help them. You know, what's going to happen? Are we going to have roving kind of tribes of survivors looking to just get food and water and shelter inland? It's a serious problem. I mean, even when we were in Australia in 1996, it was 96, 97, the Australian government was advising people in Australia not to buy or build homes along the coast, the eastern coast of Australia, from Queensland right down to Melbourne. Because of the threat of increasing water levels, which they say is not really, you know, if, but soon. And that was in 96, 97. Now we're seeing the hard data on it. And I think the whole ploy by Al Gore et al. Was to get people to start making preparations and the smart ones to move off of the coastal areas as far as water rise from quote-unquote global warming, saying, you know, that, okay, this is a problem that we can address. It's not something that's impossible. We'll, you know, limit the amount of car exhausts that are putting the, you know, the greenhouse gases in the atmosphere. And by legislation, all the countries will reduce their carbon production into the atmosphere. And that way we can possibly solve this problem, you know, with everyone's cooperation. They did that instead of saying, look, the sun is actually misbehaving terribly and going into a phase state change. We're not sure what's going to happen. It will probably get hotter, and it's already heating all the other planets in the inner five planets, and and some of the gas giants and outer planets are exhibiting heating, Uranus and Neptune. They wouldn't say that, you see, because that means it's a problem so big that we have no chance of solving it ourselves. We're just going to have to deal with loss. Loss of life, loss of property and resources, and probably loss of the United States as a country. Because when these things start happening, we're going to go into chaos here with people scrambling for resources to survive. It's one inch to a foot, you know. No, I mean, I can't explain in any other terms than to say that it's going to be catastrophic, even that small amount.
Okay. All right.
I always bring good news, you know.
Yeah, no, I've seen the Navy maps and the other projections about sea level rises, and most of the population lives on the coast. I mean, if you just look at Canada, the southern border of Canada to North America, I think 90 to 95% of the people live in 100 miles of that border. And I know along the Pacific and in the eastern coasts that there are so many cities that live along those coastlines that it would affect about half the population if we saw the sea level rise any significant amount.
Yeah, I know. It's shocking when you look at the population density here. I mean, most of our country lives over in the eastern states, east of the New Madrid. And, of course, our food supplies and a lot of, you know, other resources that the eastern states people use come from the western side of the New Madrid. Should that convert to a big earthquake and break bridges and block shipping and transport across from the west to the east. They're going to be short, you know, more than, you know, damage from earthquakes and stuff. They're going to be short supplies that they need for some time, like for weeks and months. They've got to consider that. You know, I mentioned earlier in the discussion of the ice about the Larsen Sea ice shelf down at the Antarctic. This doggone thing, it hangs out over the ocean, over the, you know, it's a shelf that hangs out over, but it's not submerged in it. And between 2011 and 2015, this crack grew around 18, 19 miles in length. You know, and it widened by some 600 or 700 feet. So we're going to see this huge 350 meter. What's that about? Maybe 1,200 foot thick ice chunk collapse into the ocean here fairly shortly. And when I say fairly shortly, within the next decade or less. And if the warming continues like it is. This is, another impact on sea level. It's not going to rise it, raise it like, 10 or 20 feet or something like that. But still, it is indicative of what's happening to the ice all over the planet. I mean, when you put it into perspective, this Larsen Sea ice shelf, the chunk that's breaking off, is slightly smaller than the country of Scotland, if you look on the map there. Anyway, these things are all adding up, along with the sun's misbehavior and with the droughts and with the, with the water shortages all over the planet. It's adding up to a crisis time right this minute. And when I say that, we've had this huge flood in Louisiana. We've had a president overplaying golf during all this, and apparently just oblivious to it. But if you look further behind the scenes, he's up to something else at the moment. He's getting ready for what may be a confrontation with Russia over NATO and NATO's threat to Russia. We're seeing chatter coming back and forth over that this is really what's happening behind the scenes and why Obama was looking like, he's just playing golf and that's it, was to not give away the game. I mean, the Defense Department here, under his guidance, has already been talking about making Iran, an ally in the war against ISIS, especially there in Syria where it's all happening. And Iran has turned General Qasem Soleimani, that we talked about years ago, turned him loose with about 100,000 troops into Iraq. And Saudi Arabia hates Iran. They're the different brand of Islam, so they're preparing, hundreds of thousands of troops with 34 member nations to stand up against Iran. Hence, that would make Saudi Arabia de facto enemy of the United States if Obama does what we think he's going to do. We won't even have an election if this war breaks out between now and November. The picture is very muddy, cloudy. Who's up who and why. It's an amazing nightmare right before us. Holly's book, the Prophetic Perils, she did talk about that Psalm 83 war. And if you look at that, the Psalm 83 war, I think I've got a link to that picture. Yeah, Holly's number 9 at the very top of the page there. If you click on that, the Saudi Arabians are supposed to lead a consortium of Arab nations against Israel to make the Psalm 83 war. We think, from what the interpreting the Bible says, and she says this in the book, that this will come before the Gog-Magog war, which will include Russia and, a bunch of the stands and probably Turkey and maybe Germany, but that's doubtful at the moment. All these countries that are not part of the Saudi Arabian Arab Consortium of 34 nations. But the Bible says that Psalm 83 war will be disastrous for the Saudi-led or the Arabian-led attack on Israel. A great fire will destroy them. And this graph here in color shows in the purple area the likely expansion of the borders of Israel after that attack. Now you can see why a peace treaty would be needed between all the nations of the world, especially those around the Middle East, around Israel, and the new territory of Israel, to say, look, Israel, okay, let's call a truce, don't use your fire weapons, nukes, or whatever, on us. Let's make a treaty, and of course the Antichrist is going to be signing that, whoever he is. The Saudis are going to be so hurt that half, the northern half of, well, maybe the northern third or fourth of Saudi Arabia is going to be given over to Israel. I don't see how Mohammed bin Salman, if he were the Antichrist, how he would be signing this treaty to a peace treaty with Israel, unless it's to save his bacon. But I look more likely at Turkey and Erdogan, but who knows. Anyway, that's where we sit politically. All these things are coming to a head this year, before the end of the year. And, of course, it goes without saying that this kind of nonsense is going to impact the global economy. You know, people are going to be either afraid to trade between nations or be very careful and reduce the amount of exposure they have to pirates or to opposing countries with their sea shipping lanes. And, you know, that doesn't even count earthquakes, volcanoes, and all the other things.
Yeah. Well, folks, you're listening to Stan Dale. StanDale.com, that's his website. StanDale.com. Also, we had Holly Dale on right before Stan. Prophetic Perils, her book, available at StanDale.com. Stan's going to be with us for the next segment, the closing segment. Folks, if you have a question for Stan, studio@HagmanandHagman.com. That's studio@HagmanandHagman.com for any questions for Stan. Stay right where you're at. We're going to be right back.
Indiana Jones, Mr. Stan Dale from StanDale.com. Folks, if you're joining us late, not only are we joined by Stan Dale, we had the pleasure of having Holly Dale, Stan's wife, on in hour number two. I would urge each and every one of you, if you missed the interview or caught part of it or listened to it, to listen again. Go back to hour number two and listen to Holly Dale talk about her latest book, Prophetic Perils, End Time Events Revealed. This thing is just as big as Dare to Prepare. It's about a 10,000-page book. No, it's really big, and it is full of important information, just like Dare to Prepare was for survival needs and everything to do with the ABCs of food, water preparations, and living in times of the unknown. Exactly. With that, we're going back to Stan Dale from StanDale.com. You can follow along on the show images page on the right-hand side of the mic. And we are taking questions via email for Stan at studio@HagmanandHagman.com. Stan, where would you like to start on this hour or this segment?
I managed during the break there to get that video link that I was talking about to that Marine guy. So if people go over there to the show images page and scroll down just to where the earthquake maps of today were, right in the middle of it, you'll see a picture of Tom. And that will lead you, hopefully, if I've linked it right.
Let me see. Lepshu video?
Yeah, Tom Lepshu, yeah.
Okay, it's like the, okay, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 7th row down in the middle.
Yeah, that's it, yeah. Okay, and so you can just follow up on what I was talking about there. And right above that picture, Tom, is a picture of the Third Temple, what it might look like in Jerusalem. Israeli media, preparations for construction of Third Temple to begin. This came out August the 15th this year, and there's a link to that article. You can read it there by clicking to it and seeing, you know, how strong the motivation is at the moment for the Third Temple to be built. And remember what I said a few shows back about Erdogan over in Turkey opening up a hand of friendship to Israel, and his leading press at the time, I don't know whether they survived the coup attempt or not, but they were saying, we need to let the Israelis build the Third Temple to Solomon up on the Temple Mount. So when you have people kind of at a grassroots level in Turkey wanting to have the Temple of Solomon up on the Temple Mount, and their leader shaking hands and making friends with Israel, and wanting to get oil and gas from Israel, you know, he's got his hat in his hand for that. You can see where this may well happen, as they're saying. And the next image over, you see a picture of the Prime Minister Netanyahu looking over his glasses. And the article there says, Israel, it's a question mark, Israel planning third temple on Al-Aqsa mosque site. Well, you just heard what I just said about it. And if you get to that article, you can click on the International Middle East Media Center about Israeli institutions and organizations are preparing to build the so-called third temple in place of the Al-Aqsa Mosque. I doubt that they'll replace the mosque. I think they'll put it up on the northern garden area, which has got trees and some minor, archaeological sites there, Solomon's Porch, some smaller kind of structures that could be removed or built around rather than get rid of the mosque. But anyway, click on those two things and read the article, because they are shaking their heads and hands and saying, let us build our temple. And this will certainly usher in the tribulation period, I'm pretty certain. I'm just watching it like a hawk.
Now, with respect to the third temple, I just have to ask you a question, Stan. I've heard so much acrimony about this. Oh, they don't need to build third temple, and on and on and on. But it's prophetic in nature. I mean, the third temple is an element of prophecy, is it not?
Yeah.
I mean, the actual physical building.
Temple. And it is a commandment to them in the in the Midrash that it is an evil generation that returns and occupies the land of Israel, you know, the Israeli generation, that occupies it and within 45 years does not rebuild the temple. And that's just, you know, been in tradition for a long time. So the purists in the faith are saying, you know, look, we need to do this because we've been here, you know, long enough. What was it, 1948? And if you had 45 years, they should have had it done by 1993. So if you say they didn't occupy the whole city of Jerusalem and the country until, say, 1963 in the Seven-Day War, if you add 45 years to that, they had to build it by 2008. So as far as the imperative to rebuild and be a righteous generation, they missed the boat a whole lot. That means that this whole situation has got to come to a head real fast. I guess before, you know, a 70 or 75-year generation has finished as well, from some starting point back there. But all this is such a complicated political and religious puzzle. My mind just kind of goes blank at times. I'm thinking, you know, who's allied with who? What's going to happen next? There are so many possibilities that, you know, you just kind of want to go, duh, 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 what's going on? It's amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. Stan, I don't know when you want to start taking questions from our audience via the emails, but we have several emails already in the hopper.
Okay. All right. Let's try it.
Let's start here. We have a Karen asks the following. What is your take on Nibiru? Doug, when you talked to John Moore, did he mention Nibiru? I think he has opinions on it, too.
Well, look, we've talked about this a number of times in the past. Until I see more hard evidence of it being close, I'm not convinced it's going to be a major player in what's happening as far as Earth changes. I do support the fact that there is a stable orbit around our sun with what's called a mean orbital axis of 36 3,600 years, plus or minus about 10 years, as far as I could calculate it. And it would be
scientists have confirmed this, even lately, the ninth planet with the oblong orbit. They haven't had pictures of it, but they say that there has to be an object out there.
Well, the one that they identified, Joe, was a smaller one like Pluto. out of the Kuiper Belt. They haven't identified or located that big one that's doing what you're talking about, the Neptune and Uranus perturbations. As far as I know, have you seen something that said that?
That's right.
No, there was an article, I believe it was either yesterday or Sunday, that talked about this new planet and how it's tilting the axis. Did Planet 9 tilt the entire solar system? Actually, it was a YouTube video. And it talked about how there would have to be a planet out there for certain things to happen the way they are happening in space. But it was just a YouTuber, you know, not really a scientist or an expert. It was just somebody giving their opinion.
Yeah, well, I can, I guess, give my opinion, too. It, you know, our solar system is kind of odd in, you know, it's in a small percentage of stellar systems that didn't form as a binary star system like two suns. We're unusual in that respect. Now, this large mass that's perturbing the orbits of Uranus and Neptune, this has been suspected for, gosh, nearly 100 years. But we're getting closer to being able to find out where it is by plotting these perturbations in the orbits. It could be, you know, a brown dead dwarf star that used to be part of a binary system with our sun. And that might explain why it tilted our whole solar system, you know, a bit off of the ecliptic plane. We thought at some time that maybe Jupiter was going to be the binary star with our sun, and it just didn't reach critical mass in its you know, its formation, so that it ignited and became a star as well. That would have been pretty difficult for Earth, but anyway, yeah. Nibiru, look, I'm completely open on that because I know the orbit is there, and it certainly fits with some of the Mayan dating things about a 3,600 year period of something coming, you know, close to the sun and upsetting the Earth. And I'm just hoping that some of my civilian astronomers in the, say, in Australia, but in the southern hemisphere, will find hard evidence of this and, you know, pass it back to us. There's just a lot of things that do indicate that our governments, not just U.S., but major world governments, and the Catholic Church, of course, are hiding some of their findings about whatever they're looking for out there. So without seeing, you know, the hard evidence, I can only say I think it's possible, and I hope to see hard data on it soon.
Okay. I've seen lots of videos.
Sorry, what?
There's so many videos out there reporting to show, you know, Planet X or Nibiru in the background, and so often, more often than not, there are lens flares and these other anomalies. And at the rate that they're being shown by amateur video takers and astronomers, if that really was Nibiru that was being captured all over the globe at these different places and from the south to north hemisphere, we would see it by now.
And of course we would.
Yeah, I think we'll know if Planet 9 or Nibiru is real and its orbit comes close to Earth. We will definitely all see it together.
Long time off. Yep. Yep.
Yeah. All right, next question. This from James in Jacksonville asks, Stan, at what rate will the sea level rise if your prediction is correct? Will people in coastal areas have time to get away? Thanks and God bless.
You know, James, I think so. You'll have time to move inland, but obviously you'd want to be ahead of the crowd and find work and accommodation. And if you own property, you know, where you are, you would want to be able to sell it at a reasonable price. Otherwise, you have to walk away from it and say, well, I've lost it. So the clever persons are going to get out of these areas and resettle before the actual warning comes. The melts, you know, will be, gosh, over years. So you do have time, and I would start doing thoughts and preparation on that right now, though.
All right. Let's go to another question. This is from Doreen. Can you ask Stan why he thinks German and the Czechs told their people to stockpile food?
You know, Angela Merkel did that. I saw the video and the translation of it. It is of concern, and I meant to cover this anyway, just ran out of time. But Doreen, Germany is at odds with Russia at the moment, and there are some rumors in Germany that she made this announcement in preparation for a confrontation with Russia, actual armed confrontation there. Russia is wanting to remove NATO as a threat to its borders, and of course Germany plays a major part in that as well. And the other thing is that she may be looking at some other type of catastrophe that will affect Germany, but she's only told them to prepare 10 days of food and water, and something else. I forget what else she asked them to prepare with, but normal things. And if you were preparing for war or for, you know, a natural catastrophe, you would need more than 10 days. So I don't know why she has done this, unless it is to alert her population to the fact that they need to get prepared for loss of, you know, municipal services and things and food supply and water for a period of time, perhaps longer than 10 days, but she says 10 days, so it cushions the effect of the warning. But for a world leader, you know, for a country leader like that to come out and say that openly to the public means she is trying to help them and it's an imminent danger.
Okay. Moving on here, this next question is from Steve, and he asked you to comment on an article last week wherein NASA said that there is a 99% chance of an earthquake happening in Los Angeles within the next 2 years. And apparently they gathered this data through monitoring other small earthquakes in the area, and the pressure builds up, the pressure built that has built up in the fault lines around Los Angeles. What kind of stock do you put into the predictions NASA is making?
I would listen, quite frankly. I know that as we get closer to the moment when the big ones are going to occur, that the warnings will become a little bit less subtle. But saying it might happen, you know, in the next 10 years, they're concerned about that, gives people, you know, a little bit of padding as to when what they're going to do. Again, as I said to the guy, James in Jacksonville, I said, you know, it's wise to prepare ahead of the rush. We do know that there are at least eight, maybe nine major fault lines running kind of north-south through California. And we know the pressure's been building up, and my concern is that the drought and the drain on the water aquifers underneath California, which has caused subsidence of many, many feet, you know, sinking down already in those areas, that this is changing the weight balance on the fault line, which we know has been building up pressure. And even though Washington and the Juan de Fuca plates north of there quite a bit, all of that is connected through fault lines that run up past Eugene in Northern California and up into the, what's it called? It's a ridge that comes in from the ocean, the Pacific Strait, into California there at Eugene. The Mendocino Ridge. Yeah, thank you, Holly. I would pay attention. You're being given warning after warning, and I wouldn't wait 10 years to do it. I would start now.
All right. There you go, Steve. Question from Jill. Stan, your opinion based on your own observations and other people's opinions that you've read that you think are credible about the severity of this year's winter. I keep hearing it's going to be a terrible winter. I know that it's hard to predict these things, but is there anything that you have seen that would lead you to believe that the winter will be more fierce and cold than usual?
Well, I know that around here that we're already looking at fall. In early fall, on our property, we're seeing it in the trees, and the leaves are turning yellow, starting in some of the plants that are trees that shouldn't do it for another month or two. So it's possible. Holly, have you heard anything about the severity of winter? Has anybody officially said anything about it going to be unusual?
No, but this is done in the face of
Yeah, now Noah's forecast, she was telling me, I thought that's what she'd seen today, was that Noah's forecast is we're going to have a warmer than normal winter. You know, at this point, I don't know. There are conflicting reports, and the weathermen are scratching their heads. You know, I know that for the last year, maybe 2 years, that our local weather here in Colorado has been strange, irregular, and like our whole crop of vegetables and apples and peaches and stuff this year are smaller. Tomatoes, they're smaller because of the weird weather. It was definitely atypically hot. So I don't know what, you know, why there would be an extremely bad winter, but let's see if we can find out something about it in the interim. Good question, Jill. Sorry about that.
No, that's quite all right. Let's see. Don't see any questions.
There's a couple of repetitive ones here, yeah. The ones that you already addressed. Interestingly, about the, I got two others about the weather.
Well, here's one.
Winter, I'm sorry.
Off of Planet X, just a continuation. If there is a Planet X, Dan, this listener would like to know if it would be considered wormwood as the Bible says.
Well, yeah, that's pretty easily answered by Scripture itself. Wormwood is going to fall into the ocean and make it bitter and kill fish, isn't it? So if it were a planet, believe me, there wouldn't be an ocean or Earth left intact. It would be just a pile of rubble floating around in the Earth's orbit. So it's going to be something smaller. It says like a star, you know, a bright thing. And that might be more like a comet or an asteroid striking the Earth, in my opinion. It's called a burning mountain, so that could also be, get this, it doesn't have to come from orbit or outside the Earth. It could be a severe eruption, because the ancients used to call volcanoes burning mountains. And something like, say, Lake Taupo, which is definitely on the watch list for a massive super eruption, if that were to erupt and blow one of the volcanoes on the edge of it, like Ruapehu, off the New Zealand coast over into the ocean, that might qualify as wormwood. And certainly the metals in it would be bitter. I mean, I've flown over Ruapehu in a small aircraft when it was boiling a sulfuric sea in the caldera there, in the cavity of the top of Ruapehu. We weren't certain where it was about to erupt at the time. It was busy. Bubbling lake of sulfuric acid just underneath the wings there. It was a little bit intimidating. But if that were to blow that sulfuric acid stuff and any of the other minerals that are there off into the Pacific there, that might well pollute the ocean, like with, you know, metal toxins and stuff that makes the water bitter and kills a lot of fish. I doubt that the Yellowstone caldera would be close enough. If something like that happened at Mammoth, for instance, I don't see that happening immediately, but that would be close enough to possibly throw something off into the water table of the Pacific. But just look at Scripture and look at all the factors that describe wormwood and write them down and then say, what could cause this? And it's not going to be a large planet, because that would be such a huge thing that there would be no life left on the planet. It would destroy the planet entirely.
All right. Very good. I mean, well, maybe I shouldn't have said very good, but wow. All
right. Yeah, no.
Hey, okay. Well, okay. Take us into any unfinished observations, Stan.
I want to address something here which has been kind of in the back burner, if at all, in both the Trump and Clinton campaigns. They have talked about a lot of things that are near and dear to people, and Trump is talking about, well, if he gets to be president, he's going to increase jobs and do all this kind of stuff. One of the ways he might do that, of course, is to continue funding and increase the funding to NASA in their reach for Mars. And the space agency, NASA, is looking at the transition of government and wondering whether we're going to have enough budget to keep NASA functioning, at least on the side of Mars and space exploration, which, you know, brings up a question of why do we need to be spending money on such things, you know, it's such huge budgets on going to Mars. We've got such huge local problems. I'd rather see them spend money on, like, near-Earth object detection and deflection. You know, put money into that, because that's a clear and present danger, which that wormwood thing may well be. But you can see that if you go, if you look for the article, NASA's hopes for Mars and the future are at stake. And you can link to that with the picture above the temple picture, Mars and the future at stake in the 2016 election. Click on that and see that consideration. You know, it would employ a lot of people if they did shift direction and make NASA going after more clear and present dangers closer to the Earth. I'd be in favor of that, and I'm not sure whether that would require going to the moon again and setting up staging there for deflecting asteroids or, you know, smaller meteors. But we know from recent events in Russia and elsewhere on the planet, there have been small explosions, relatively small, when fragments of a meteor or meteorite now broke up in the atmosphere and struck targets on the Earth. You know, Space Command is tasked with doing that. Holly and I visited them. They are tasked with watching some 5,000 objects that they know about, and there's a lot more they don't know about, that are potentially near-Earth orbiting objects that could cause a lot of damage. The whole planet, in essence, should be looking after this, not just us and NASA. So I think that maybe I'll write an email to Trump and see what he's going to do about that. I don't think Hillary would do anything about it. She's just kind of uneventful on things that are important.
That's for sure.
Well, you know, I'm going to write an article. Only in the pickled minds of conspiracy cukes. I don't know.
Yeah, like, I don't know where this thing is going. I sometimes really think that Obama is cool and calm and collected, playing his golf and being disinterested, because deep down he knows that we're going to have such a crisis arise that he'll stall the election. You know, I just feel this. Whether it be a candidate gets ill and they have to regroup and allow the other party to, you know, get a new candidate or whatever, or if it's war in Europe or the Middle East, or terrorist attacks here in the country, I think he is well aware of what's about to happen by their plan. And that's why he's so calm.
So, you know, I agree with that. I was looking at some of the. Obama. No, they're one and the same. Obama,
yep,
is skipping the Clinton Global Initiative meeting here that's scheduled shortly. He seems to be disinterested, suggesting, you know, I'm going to be out here in 5 months anyway, so leave me alone, kind of thing. But yet, there is that presence, the troubling presence of this this overshadowing feeling that everyone's got and people have, that, man, you know, he could just not go. And I, you know, as an American and as someone who's heard every single election for the past, I don't know how many, since 9/11 anyway, that, you know, there's no plans to change leadership. Well, what do you, is your spirit telling you, I mean, you know, that, are you troubled too? I mean, obviously.
Oh, well, definitely, Doug. I feel that we're heading into a crisis of major proportions, but as I was saying earlier in the show, I don't know where it's going to come from. You know, this hypothesis I put forward here about Obama staying in office, or about, you know, Hillary being too ill and being taken out, or, you know, either one of the candidates suffering an attack by some lunatic, and, you know, or the war starting in the Middle East or in Europe with NATO against Russia. All these things are possible. And perhaps not well orchestrated when it starts to happen, but, you know, I feel the uneasiness that so many people around us do. Just ordinary people you talk to, there's something in the air. You can feel it.
That's 100% certain. Stan, you've done it again. You've taken us through.
You and Holly.
Yeah, you and Holly. Thank you. Thank you both for gracing our program with your presence again this week. And with Holly, it was an extra special show.
It was, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. It really was. And please extend our thanks to her again. We've got so many people sending emails saying, what a great job, and, you know, what a sweet lady. So, God bless you.
All right. God bless you now.
Until
night,
next
night.
All right. Yep. Folks, that'll do it for us, Cass. Now, I'll say the rest of the week is going to be just a fantastic week. We got so much going for
two new guests.
Two
different fields of expertise. One, Chuck Baldwin, Pastor Chuck Baldwin, author of Romans 13, will be our guest tomorrow for the first 2 hours.
Patrick Wood on Thursday. And
Technocracy Rising.
Boy, oh boy. You know what? Buckle up for that one. Buckle up,
author,
baby.
Author Patrick Wood Thursday for That's the right. whole 3 hours, and Ted Broer on Tuesday.
Good night, everyone.